This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And good morning, in case you're following us via camera. Charlie has changed dramatically. She's not here, but she's home in bed.
I'm not in bed.
Well, you're in your jammies, I'll bet you.
Pretty close.
Pretty darn close, okay? Yeah, with the impending weather forecast, or at least bad weather, that's supposed to be hitting almost any time soon, Charlie judiciously made the right decision to stay home there in Prince Edward County rather than chance things on the 401. Normally, about a two-hour drive for you, but, you know,
They were using words like treacherous for driving along the north shore of Lake Ontario today.
Right.
Once the snow starts and the wind starts and all that kind of craziness starts, right now it's all just gray and it's kind of, you can tell snow's coming. It's got that snow sky happening.
Exactly.
But so far right now it's not snowing. But yeah, I just thought, you know, safety first.
Exactly.
No, I miss you, Frank. I wish I was there.
Well, yeah, I do too, because I think it was your turn to buy breakfast.
I was going to say, good Saturday to
Son of a
right?
gun, yeah. Wait a minute. Weatherman did me in there. Well, look, let me do my job here as I'm glancing up at our monitor.
And glancing, I like that.
Yeah, nothing's happening. So
we
would appreciate a phone call or two. In Toronto, you want to talk to Charlie Dobbin, ask any question at all. Well, not any question, but keep it to gardening if you would. The number is 416-360-0740. And then anywhere in the province, it is toll-free, 1-866-740-4740. Now, Charlie, you usually, I've got to give my little mantra here.
Mm.
Okay. Call early, call often, one question per call. And if you happen to be a first-time caller, let Duncan know when you talk to him on the phone. He's our operator, and he'll let me know. And then just before you get to the airwaves, you're going to hear that. Yeah. Wow. Get your garden wings.
That's right.
Now, do you have any little notes you want to pass along here?
Well, there's a couple of things going on, and many of them are kind of, we're used to seeing them come up every year. They're annual events because, remember, we are, you know, pending spring is just around the corner.
Yeah.
I really noticed that yesterday morning, Thursday morning, the sun was actually up by 7:30, like it was light out. In the morning, it was wonderful, and even last night, the sun didn't go down until after 5 o'clock. So I'm really seeing a difference in the daylight, which I'm loving, because I'm driving, so, you know, during these crazy hours.
Right.
So one of the things that's coming up, and now you've been to this, but lately you've been going to Florida, and you'll be again in Florida, is the very famous Ontario Orchid Show and Sale that's presented by the Southern Ontario Orchid Society. It happens every year, right around Valentine's Day. So this year it's February 8th and 9th. So that's a Saturday, Sunday, 11 to 5 at the Toronto Botanical Gardens. There will be over 30,000 exotic orchids on display and for sale. There's guided tours. There's growing supplies, which is quite handy, actually, for a lot of people. They need a special orchid pot or orchid media. This is the place to get it. There'll be art and photography for sale. There's seminars by orchid experts. Like, all in all, it's a very, very good show. $12 admission. However, 2 weeks from today, so February 1st, Terry Kennedy will be joining us on the garden show. Mm-hmm. And she's a member, as you know, of the Orchid Society. And she's going to bring some free entrance tickets with
her. That's great.
So 2 weeks from today, people will need to be tuning in, asking questions, and seeing if they can win free access to the Orchid Show. Otherwise, it's still worth the $12, seriously.
Yeah, I remember we visited the Orchid Show, you and I, and met some old friends, my ex-neighbors, Peter and Inga Poot.
Who are
very involved. That's right, involved in the Orchid Society.
Well, and they're growers, too, or they're just hobby growers. They don't Like, Terry and her husband started as hobby growers, but then it got so out of control, they got into retail as well. So, yeah, orchids, they tend to grab people.
Okay. I'm going to give you a little heads up here. Mm. We got several folks online.
Nice.
First person we're going to be speaking to is Selsa in Toronto, and the question is how to grow an orchid tree. Isn't that handy? Okay. So we have to take our first little break right now, and then we'll come back. Charlie from Prince Edward County and her beautiful new home there, Frankie, in the studio, all together with The Garden Show on Zoomer Radio.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And just in case you've just joined us here on AM 740, The Garden Show, you got to know that Charlie is not in studio, but home in Prince Edward County, where we're expecting, as we are here in Toronto, some pretty significant snowfall. So that's the reason that's happening. All right. Let's go to our phone. We have callers online, as I had mentioned, to Charlie. Selsa from Toronto. Selsa, I guess it is. Maybe I should get a proper pronunciation guide there. Am I anywhere close with that, Selsa? Hi.
Hi. Hi, Frank. And hi, Charlie. Happy New Year to you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Morning.
Pardon me?
I said, good morning. What's going on at your place?
Good morning. Oh, yeah, not yet. The snow is not yet down, but as you said, it's, it's a snow sky.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. What I want to say is that, really be quick, I have received a gift for Christmas. It's a cube, wooden box, and it's all natural eco cube. Now, in that, it says grow your own orchid tree, okay? Now, I was looking online, and I was wondering, how big will this tree grow? Because it's not an orchid tree.
So I need to know a little more about that. So it's the box says Eco Cube on it?
Yes, it's an Eco Cube. It's a wooden box.
Oh, yeah.
And in it is, it's like it's grow your own, the care instructions comes with fertilizer. You open the Eco Cube and you pull back the sticker, then you pour 35 ml of water into the cube, and then you keep it in a warm place and a bright warm place and water requirements, but to help prevent the moisture from escaping, they say place a clear plastic bag over the cube during the germination period. And after about 2 to 4 weeks, the orchid tree will grow. And then you can, about 6 months after, you can bury the entire cube into a pot. Now, I was looking online, and I said, how big will this tree be?
I think they're just calling it a tree just to really make you feel like, oh, wow, this is going to be amazing. I was just looking it up. So it's not even really an orchid. It's a plant called Bauhinia variegata candida.
Right.
So that
looks,
is...
I mean, the flowers are similar, but not... I think it's a Asian type of a tree.
Yeah, I mean, it's originally from tropical... It's an ornamental, widely cultivated as an ornamental in tropical Asia. Now, keep in mind that our growing conditions inside our homes is very different from any kind of outdoor conditions that people would be able to grow outdoors, where it's originally from. So you're right, it is a real tree in the real world of outside gardens in the tropics and subtropics. But here, like it says right here, 12 meters tall.
That's right.
But no, you're not going to see that. But it does look very pretty. So your main thing will be to provide the best possible conditions for this plant. So following all the directions, it's going to want warm temperatures, obviously no drafts, no windows open, not near a front door, anything like that.
Right.
If you can grow it in a place where there's some humidity, like a bathroom or a kitchen, that would be best because, typically that's going to be the high humidity. It's going to be the native environment it's used to.
Right.
If it does say here, the flowers are edible. So if you get to that point where you've got flowers and you feel like eating them, I guess you can. So that's always fun. But yeah, I wouldn't be concerned about getting too big. I would just follow all the instructions to get it up to being a little plant, provide the bright light that they're recommending. It does look very interesting. I'm not sure if it's fragrant or not. But,
yeah, Salsa, keep in touch with us and let us know how that goes, okay?
I will. I love to try out things.
Well,
and
good.
And this is something that someone knows that I love gardening, so the plants. And so she brought that for me for Christmas.
Yeah, so it could be a good challenge, but it's perfect to support your hobby.
Yeah.
Yeah, just looking a little closer here. It does say they're orchid-like flowers, but they're sweetly scented. So, and it is widely cultivated in tropical Asia, so it can't be too hard to grow, but of course you don't really have tropical Asia inside your house, so you'll have to try and provide that for the plants.
Yeah, because what happens is also during the winter, remember that there's no cross ventilation. So that was my concern.
We don't have
cross ventilation, and there's a lot of, like if you're cooking, and there's a lot of, other things in the air, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And not to mention the hot, dry air blowing off your furnace.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, let us know how this goes. I'd love to hear if you're successful getting the seeds to germinate and growing this plant up, because it does look very interesting.
Yes, it looks. And I keep looking at the cube every day. I said, should I put it now? Should I start now?
You could. Yes, you could. With the days getting longer, plants are very clever. They know that. They can.
Yes.
They respond to these longer days. So, for sure, if we're germinating seeds or getting a little plant started, we are certainly at a good point to get going on that.
Salsa, good luck with that. We have to kind of move along. We have several callers waiting online, and we appreciate that call. And good luck with that new little orchid tree.
Sounds
intriguing,
funny.
Yeah. And when we come back, Charlie, we're going to take a little bit of a break now. Barbara in Burlington, first-time caller, has a question for you regarding hibiscus. So we'll deal with that, or at least you will, when we return with The Garden Show on Zoomer Radio.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Alrighty, Charlie, from Prince Edward County, might I add. Let's,
I miss you, Frank.
I miss you too, hon. Let's go to the line here where Barbara from Burlington's on the line. And hey, there you are, first-time caller, Barbara. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I
hey,
listen
Barbara.
All the time. So, my husband just retired, and he is having some challenges filling his day, and he's decided that one of the things he likes to do is some plants and such forth in the house. How do you propagate hibiscus and rhododendron? Because I think that sort of big job would be good for him.
Nice of you to come up with a tough job.
Well, he keeps staring at them saying, I wonder how I can make, you know. So I'm going to call for him.
I mean, it can be done. Actually, I know somebody asked me this question not long ago, and I have it even printed out. There we go. So we're talking tropical hibiscus plants, not the Rose of Sharon.
Not Rose of Sharon.
Right. So this is an indoor plant, the hibiscus.
Yes. And we take it out every summer.
Uh-huh.
And it flowers and it's happy, and then we bring it in and it keeps flowering and it's still happy. And the plant, the one plant is about 40 years old. But it gets very woody.
Right.
So we just thought if we could propagate it, it would make him feel happy with his retirement.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that so many of our hibiscus plants that we love, we've chosen them specifically for some characteristic, like the color of the flowers, for example. I have one that's a really beautiful apricot color, and I love it. And now when I want to propagate that plant, so I want to share that plant with my friends, I do it by taking cuttings. That way I'm guaranteed to produce, to hand the exact same plant with the exact same color flowers to my friends and neighbors. From seed, there's no guarantee that you will get the same plant as what you're propagating from the mother.
He was thinking of grafting.
Oh, yes.
Did you do that with hibiscus?
Again, it depends. Okay, so the reason we graft, and people do, though, see, hibiscus is such a vigorous plant. Yeah, so what we'll do is we'll graft different colors, for example, so a red, a yellow, a pink, all little different pieces of different colored hibiscus onto one plant, and then in our pot, we have one plant that blooms with multicolored blooms, and that's pretty cool. People love that. That's a showstopper. But because hibiscus is such a vigorous, fast-growing plant, what we more traditionally do, which is way easier than grafting, is we will get little cuttings of all different colors, plant them all together in one pot, and as they grow, we'll braid them or twist them or make them grow together as they get growing, and then before you know it, you have, again, a pot full of what looks like one plant, but is actually multi-plants with all different colored flowers. But yeah, no, if your husband's interested, there's lots of great online stuff for trying different forms of propagation. And I was teaching a course at Humber College, a night course, and it was all about greenhouse growing and what to grow in greenhouses and how to grow in greenhouses. So, I mean, there's certainly lots of opportunity for the retired person to find great information out there. Toronto Botanical Garden. Oh, you're in Burlington, so Royal Botanical Gardens, for sure. I could bring it up on my computer here. We'll have some kind of neat stuff going on. They always have great lectures and sessions for hobby gardeners. So I'd be inclined to go that route, but certainly think about cuttings for both rhododendrons and hibiscus. New growth is what you're going to cut from. Though the rhododendron, we'd probably be cutting, double check that, probably more like early spring for the rhododendron where you don't have a flower bud attached.
Okay, and no flower.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have a lot of squirrels, and they love to eat the rhododendron buds.
Oh, I know.
I hate
them. They do that.
I have a terrible name for them, but I won't repeat it. So we cover it with material, but at the end of the season, they got in and broke a couple, and he's trying to root them in water, but one of them has a bud on it.
Oh,
so that's not going to work.
No, it's not. No, you have to cut the bud off. Yeah, and you know what? There are some sprays out there that are very much a squirrel deterrent that are, you know, anything from something called Plant Skid, Plant SKYDD, or I know I have something that's like a cayenne-based spray, or there's garlic-based sprays that might work to spray on the buds in the spring, so you don't have to actually physically cover with netting, but just use sprays to deter squirrels. And then respray as necessary after rain, et cetera.
Okay, that's great. Thank you so much.
Okay. Well, thank you, Barbara.
For calling.
Thank you for holding yourself in check from using a bad word or two, because the CRTC kind of frowns on that. In fact, a little behind-the-scenes story, in one of our studios where we record a lot of commercials, that sort of thing, there's a sign right above the microphone that says, "Bad words bring tears." So you often regret, you know, saying something that you really didn't mean to go out over the air, but it does. Oh, boy. Big problems. Anyway, thank you for that first-time caller, Barbara from Burlington.
Mm-hmm.
Just a note that the lines are open here right now. We've got several available, so give a call, please, in Toronto, 416-360-0740, and then anywhere in the province, toll-free, 1-866-740-4740. And our next caller, this will afford me the opportunity to not have to pay a long-distance charge to say hi to my brother-in-law and sister-in-law in Waterloo. That would be Ron and Sue Shane. Good morning, guys. Nice. I'm sure you're tuned in, but I certainly know that Catherine is in Waterloo, Ontario. Good morning, Catherine.
Good morning, Frank. Good morning, Charlie.
Good morning, Catherine.
Hi. I'd like to know what seeds can I sprout here in my kitchen, other than alfalfa. I have alfalfa down.
Oh, right. So you've got like a little sprouter?
You know,
edible.
The jar. Yeah.
Wow, the sky's the limit, really. There's so many sprouts that people you know, love to eat. I know we were talking about this, was it a week or two ago?
Yeah.
All the different kinds of seeds. Anything, you know, you can do radish sprouts, you can do sunflower sprouts, you can do radishes, beets make a great little sprout, you know, because you get little beet greens. Literally, the sky's the limit. There's so much you can do there.
Yeah. Yeah. Mung bean?
Yep, all the beans. There's lots and lots of beans. Any of the beans make great great sprouts, and you know, super healthy as well, right? All of these sprouts are just full of nutrients, and so nice in the winter, just that green, that fresh taste that you'll get from these, you know, because you grow them, they start to germinate, you literally get out your little scissors, cut off those little stems as they start to grow, and then, yeah, throw them on a salad, throw them on a piece of toast, anything like that. They're just yummy.
That sounds good. It's making me hungry.
I know. Me too.
Well, okay. Is that the answer you're looking for, Catherine?
Yeah.
All righty. Well, continue to have a great day, and thank you for calling.
Thanks.
Here
for calling,
on the Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin today, broadcasting via phone from Prince Edward County, your new home there. How are things working out, by the way, at the new homestead?
How's that? What?
How are things working out for you at the new homestead?
Oh, they're working out very nicely. I mean, I've got a lot of work to do outside.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's nice and cozy inside, I'll say that. It's got a nice fireplace, and there's, you know, the flames roaring away, and it's just it's a push-button fireplace. Gotta love that.
Yeah.
And the cats love it. The cats love the fireplace.
Oh, Mist, the adopted cat, now is fully domesticated, I'm sure.
From fully wild to fully tame, all in about 6 years. He sleeps in our bed with us, and he cuddles up in front of the fireplace all day. It's very funny.
You know, our last caller, Catherine, brought up the subject of beans, and I remember I was telling one of my friends the little story in our family. I have two boys, but when they were very young, I think Kelly maybe was about six, and he was bringing home a little project to growing a bean, at, you know, a little in a little pot there in the kitchen on the windowsill. And so Toby, who was 3 years younger, and I guess would be about three and a half at about that time, came downstairs one morning about 6 o'clock before anybody else was up and decided that he'd help feed that little bean. And he put a banana in there and scrunched it all up, and then went to the fridge, got the jug of milk out, and poured milk all over it. And when we come downstairs, oh my God, the mess all over the place was just, but he thought he was doing, you know, growing a little bean there.
Yeah, so and he's such a nurturer too. That's sweet when you think about it, what he's motivated by. Pretty funny.
Anyway,
I'm just looking at some of these sprouting seeds that Catherine was asking about. I just Googled very simply seeds for sprouting Canada and it comes up with a bunch of different suppliers. VZ's has, many of them have mixes, right? So Amazon's got a huge selection of high quality sprouting seeds from another supplier. So there's all kinds, and these are all basically, you know, order online and have them delivered to your house. So a lot of these are spring salad mixes or just different mixes, or you can actually break it down into specific seeds for the purposes of sprouting and eating. So yeah, there's lots and lots out there, and we're coming up to all the Seedy Saturdays and Seedy Sundays, and I'll be announcing all those in the next few weeks.
Oh yeah, that's good. That might be a good point to put on the air too, your email address, if folks want to send you announcements of any sort. We'd like to, of course, give a helping hand to let folks know what's happening within the gardening world. So you can send a little email along to Charlie Dobbin at c.dobbin, D-O-B-B-I-N, at mzmedia.com. Okay? There we go. Yeah.
No, it's true, yeah.
I see some other callers are just getting through on the line here, so we'll have one slated in just moments from now.
While we're doing that, do you want me to share with you a couple upcoming things? For example, the Toronto Botanical Gardens every spring puts on an event called Get the Jump on Spring.
Uh-huh.
And this year it is Saturday, February 22nd, so it's still a few weeks away, but it's all day Saturday, 10 to 3, February 22nd, it is both Get the Jump on Spring and Seedy Saturday. So what does that mean? It means there's free talks and demonstrations. There's books, used books for sale. Mm-hmm. Gardening advice from the Toronto Master Gardeners are there. There's a cafe, coffee bar, silent auction. Lots of exhibitors, a long, long list of all kinds of different exhibitors who will be there selling and sharing information, presentations, demonstrations, and of course, Seedy Saturdays are all about swapping seeds.
You got it.
Bring your own seeds in envelopes labeled, and you can swap, just go to the registration table, and yeah, try to leave with around the same number of seeds that you brought with you. It's a very good idea.
Very
or
good.
Just straight buying seeds as well.
Okay, we have a caller online from Niagara Falls right now, and that would be Elaine, who wants to talk about bougainvillea, I do believe.
Oh,
hi, Elaine. Good morning.
Good morning, you two. It's snowing here.
Oh, I'm glad you did that.
It's starting at your end.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. Hunker
anyway.
Down. Don't go outside.
No, I'm not planning on.
Oh, by the way, Elaine's a first-time caller.
First
there
time
we go.
Caller. Welcome, welcome.
Thank you so much. I have been bringing this bougainvillea in and out for about 3 or 4 years now, and it really has gotten leggy, and I'm scared to death to prune it.
Why?
Only because at Christmas time it was bare and I was sick and I went out and there it is full of leaves and I'm thinking, oh, what do I do now?
Oh, so if you have it in a cool, attempting to keep it dormant situation?
Well, I have a wonderful almost 30-year-old sunroom that faces south and has west, south, and east windows, all big and bright.
And so normally, you don't heat that, it sounds like. But
well, there is some heat, but it really stays below a 65.
Right. Yeah, and we've had such a mild winter that, so it was very warm, and that was really contributing to encouraging growth on the bougainvillea. So what I would do, of course, you're going to keep it in that sunroom, which sounds absolutely perfect, and you are going to want to do some pruning. The question is, do you want to do it now or do you want to wait 4 to 6 weeks to do it? Either way,
okay.
You're going to want to do some pruning. And when you do it, you will be encouraging new growth.
All right.
So when you prune, try and envision where the next growth is going to come from, because you're going to try and do fairly, up to 30% of the plant can be removed in this pruning
30%,
process. But that's going to be it. You just want to do that once, and then you want to let it fill back in with green leaves and buds and flowers through the spring and the summer and next fall. And, of course, you'll be prepared to next spring be pruning again. So the idea is to prune once a year if you can.
Okay.
And just try to envision where it's going to grow to. And it will certainly look a lot better for the pruning you're going
to
do.
Yes, yes. That sounds wonderful. I was scared to death to kill it.
No, you won't kill it. Also, we are getting to that time of year as the days get longer and as we do pull out our nice sharp pruners is to get out the fertilizer. So not a bad idea with our potted plants because they do start getting struggle for nutrition, particularly if they've been in the same pot for 3 or 4 years.
Well, thank you for your help.
Elaine, thank you for your weather report there. That snow, is it quite heavy right at the moment?
Well, 30 minutes ago, there was nothing on the ground, and it's covered now.
Oh, really? Okay.
So it's arrived.
All right.
Yep. It's crossed the border. Somehow it got across the border from Colorado.
Okay.
Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome very much.
Thank you for calling, yeah.
And we have another first-time caller waiting online we'll get to in just moments from Wasaga Beach. So you stand by, and the phone lines are indeed open, 416-360-0740 Toronto. Anywhere in the province, toll free 1-866-744-740. Charlie Dobbin on the phone from Prince Edward County doing the show this morning. Frank in studio.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stalks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Well, Charlie, let's welcome another first-time caller. That's for Caroline in Wasaga Beach. Good morning,
excellent.
Caroline.
Excellent. Welcome.
Good morning.
Yeah,
good morning.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead, Caroline.
I have a question. In our backyard, we're in a condo, a townhouse condo, and there's two rows of big logs right at the back of our little yard. And I'm looking for something I can plant in between them that will give me color, but not grow too big, too tall.
Right. Okay, so I just missed it's two rows of what?
Great big rocks.
Oh, rocks.
Yeah.
Huh.
Hmm.
And those are there. Those are out your back of the condo. And those are just almost like a defining the property, or are they there as bollards along the road?
They go along the back of the property.
Back of the property. What direction, when you look out your back, what direction are you looking? Is it like morning sun coming up, or sun going down? Or
we get the sun in the morning.
In the morning. And how roughly what's the size of the rocks? The height.
Oh, some of them are 2 feet long and a foot deep.
So they're good size.
They're about knee high when you get to the where they are, and then go a step up.
Yeah, so the challenge, I mean, it's doable to actually plant specific plants in between the rocks, but I imagine those rocks are placed in grass or turf, right? You've got all
sand.
Going around it.
Yeah,
so that's going to be the challenge. That even if you plant individual plants between each of those rocks, the grass is going to want to grow in around whatever you plant, and it's going to be very difficult to maintain. What I'd be inclined to do, I guess it would kind of depend on how the scale of this project, but I'd be inclined to make a garden that incorporates the rocks into the garden, but we then would add in a mix of various perennials for color, you know, some nice colorful perennials, maybe some shrubbery, small, could be a few roses, just get some plants to soften the rocks, but also shape that garden in such a way that it's the perimeter of it is outside the rocks. So trimming the lawn is going to be easy, and trimming the edge of that garden with a whippersnipper or whatever would also be easy. And then the rocks won't be as obvious. They'll just be part of the garden.
Yeah. I'm not worried about the rocks not being obvious. I'm just looking for some color when I look out our bedroom window or our kitchen.
There's lots and lots of choices depending on what colors you like. I mean, you can go with some annual flowers, simple, like cosmos is a nice one. Zinnias are getting back in vogue and very easy to grow and wonderful pollinator supporters, you know, because that's part of what we also want to do when we're growing flowers. We want to support all the insects that pollinate, we rely on for pollination. So there are many, many perennials. Early spring, many of the bulbs are excellent to support the bees that wake up early in the early spring, and then so we've got, you know, crocuses and all kinds of little bulbs that are wonderful early, moving through to, you know, daylilies. Gosh, there's all kinds of very easy to grow perennials through the midsummer, and then towards the end of the summer we look at things like sedum and black-eyed Susans, all of which are, again, nice color late in the season and great pollinator supporters.
Good.
Okay.
That sounds great.
Okay, Carolyn.
Yeah, thank you.
All righty. Thank you. Boy, you had a number of answers for Carolyn there.
Well, I know. I was just trying to envision what she had going on there, and you just don't want to emphasize the rocks. I would say you want to kind of want to make those rocks disappear a bit. But,
that's right. Okay, we have to take a little bit of a break, Charlie. Give you a rest as you work hard at home.
It's exhausting just getting out of bed and having to do a radio show in my pajamas.
Slurping your coffee there in your PJs. All righty. We're coming back in moments to talk to a first-time caller right here in Toronto. That's coming up next on The Garden Show with Frank Proctor and, of course, Charlie Dobbin.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And Charlie Dobbin on the air from her phone in Prince Edward County. And you'll be interested to know, we've talked quite a bit about orchids this morning. Well, here's a first-time caller, Jane in Toronto, who has a question about orchids. Good morning, Jane.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I was just calling because, sorry, I missed part of your show this morning, but I have an orchid that my stepson gave me for Mother's Day, and all the flowers fell off in October, November, but I still have the two, it's a double, the two stalks showing up, and they look like dead wood. Do you wait for those to come back or cut them off?
No, if they look like dead wood, if they're dark brown or black or shriveled or dried up looking, sharp pruners or scissors, and just cut those out from where that brown or black is.
Okay.
If they're green, I leave them alone because sometimes they will pop out another bud.
Okay.
But once they turn brown or dark color, they're toast. and now you're just going to support the leaves, and a new flower stalk will grow.
Oh, okay. Thank you so much.
Okay.
And I love your show, so have
thank
a great
you very
day.
Much.
Thank you, Jane.
Thank you.
That's nice of you to say. We really appreciate that, honestly.
Me
we do.
Too. Honestly, too, yeah.
Boy, I'm telling you, the calls from all over. Now, here we go. We're going to Burlington and saying hi to Nancy. Hi, Nancy. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Frank. Charlie, I pot up my geraniums every fall. I cut them back, but as you know, they just get stringy and spindly. I don't feed them, but I do water them. And I'm just wondering, when is the best time for me to cut them back, and how far should I cut them back to get them ready for spring?
Actually, you could do it anytime now, anytime in the next, now over the next few weeks. It's, I would do my cutting back preferably when it's, well, I mean, it doesn't really matter, but they're going to respond best on a sunny day where you've got some bright sun. I assume you've got them in a room where there's windows, or have you got them in a basement?
They're all in windows.
Yeah. So plants are totally responding to these longer days. So that cutting back is very invigorating. You get all that spindly, weak growth in the winter. So sharp scissors or pruners, you go in there, cutting away. You know, you can save some of those little bits you're cutting off and use them as cuttings, depending if you want more plants or not. That's what the growers do. They have the mother plants, like you have, sitting all winter, just kind of growing slowly in a sunny greenhouse or window. And then right about this time, mid-January to third, fourth week of January, they'll go in there and just cut them right back, prune them right back, taking cuttings that are anywhere from 3 to 4 inches long off of each of the stems. Those are all put into a propagation area so that roots will grow off the cuttings. So they've got, obviously, you know, 10, 20 plants coming off of each of the mother plants. And meanwhile, the mother plants are put back up into the greenhouse to continue to grow and get very fat and juicy and very dense growth. And then they're premium plants in the spring if they are for sale, or they do another load of cutting back in about 6 weeks.
Okay, so you're suggesting that I may have to cut again?
You can if you want to. This depends how big you want your geraniums when they go outside.
Yeah, I want them to be very identifiable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you put them in the garden, I don't want them so wasted that that you can hardly see what you've got.
Right, tiny little plant.
So when you cut them back, how far do you cut back?
4 to 6 inches.
Okay.
And like I said, you can save those cuttings and root them for yourself or for others, or just compost those and keep the main plant. And when you're doing your cutting back, remember, look where the next bud is going to grow at, so that you're growing to the outside of the plant. You're going to really try and help the plant be a bushy, good-looking, balanced plant.
Yeah.
Okay?
Okay. Thanks very much.
Thank you so much, Nancy, and
appreciate
you calling in. Yeah, gee whiz, we have another first-time caller. You know what? The greater preponderance of all our callers this morning have been first-time callers, as is Bill from Pickering. Good morning, Bill.
Nice. Good morning. How are you?
Great.
Good morning, Bill.
It's another geranium question, and I just learned a bunch of stuff. I've been propagating geraniums since White Rose closed, so you know how long that is.
Yeah, 2 years ago, 2003, yep.
And so some of them I've got them through 4 or 5 years, taking cuttings each year. Mm-hmm. But my question this morning is stem rot. How does it spread?
How does it spread?
Yeah.
Well, it is a fungal disease.
Sorry?
It's a fungal disease, so
yes.
Fungus. So all fungal diseases spread in conditions that allow it to grow, or by us on our hands or our tools, our pruners, for example.
Okay.
Okay.
So not through water. I was wondering, I'll have 80 cuttings going, and by the time it's time to pot them all up, I've got probably 80% of them, some years down to 60%, but that's the number one problem.
And the stems have rotted at ground level.
Yes, just above. Yeah, and they get all soft and they're done.
Yeah. So what you've got to do, or the reason that's happening, it's a funny thing. The spores could be transmitted via water because many fungal spores are waterborne. But more likely, I mean, what you want is you want no stem rot to occur. Like you want no spores to be in your greenhouse or your growing operation whatsoever. So the way to do that, of course, is be very, very careful with your watering. The reason you're getting the stem rot is that the soil is staying wet for too long. And you say, well, but I need to water. I can see the plants are starting to wilt. So what I'd be saying in that situation is really look closely at maybe running a fan or getting some better air circulation where you've got all those cuttings growing, because that is one of the biggest issues in our, when we get really crowded with our plants, the air movement slows down to such an extent that we start encouraging and developing fungal diseases. So I would just a simple fan blowing across the surface of the soil as much as you can, moving the plants as necessary, and just avoid having any stem rot whatsoever if you can.
If I, like when we go away a week or a week or two in the winter, I will use watering mats.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, do you think it might spread through that as well?
It could, but it's a good idea. You still need to keep those, the water has to be, the mats are probably better waterers than any of your friendly neighbors would ever be, because most people don't know how to water and they tend to overwater, right? So, you know, your mats are something you can really set them up to water properly. So I wouldn't be concerned that it's spreading through the watering in the watering mats. I would just be concerned that, you know, avoid the circumstances that contribute to fungal diseases. So avoid dead air, avoid dark areas, like get some maybe light. Do you have supplemental lighting on this, or do you just rely on windows?
Basement, but right now they're down to about 5 hours of light.
You know what, guys?
And they're really happy with that.
Bill, I'm very sorry, but we're fresh out of time here.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. With Charlie not being in studio, she hasn't got an eye on that monitor as I do, and knowing that we're quickly running out of time. Dave's Corner Garage all set to rev up. Hey, listen, by golly, I'm so glad you decided to stay there at home and be safe. That's what folks should do in clement weather like this, Charlie. Good
That's
for you.
That's right. So you get home yourself.
Yeah, will do.
After your show. Thanks a bunch, okay. Frank. I really appreciate you being the quarterback on this today.
No problem, my love. You take care, okay?
Thanks, Doug.
All right, keep warm. Thank
you
for
listening. See you next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.